Good Friday afternoon to you. I'm Andy Klein, and welcome to a Juno Afternoon. Today we're going to be talking to Marianne Mills and Shelley Smith, and they'll be here talking with us about an overview of the Southeast Senior Services. Going to get to talk to Pat Hartman about the Southeast Alaska Master Gardener Tour coming up. We're also going to be continuing our series on summer fun with Becky Janes of Above and Beyond Alaska, and we're going to hear a really cool story about Nimbus from our talented Morning Edition host and producer, Matt Miller. That's all coming up, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, more, lots of fun ahead. First, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. New ads about moments in Canadian history include Indian residential schools. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the ads were released this week to coincide with National Aboriginal Day.
This historical moment is called Dying for an Education. It follows the story of Shani Wenjack, who attended a residential school in northern Ontario in the 1960s.
Shani wanted to go back home. It was 1,000 kilometers away. They forced them to go to the Indian residential school. More than 150,000 of us children had to go.
It was created by Historica Canada, a non-profit organization dedicated to enhancing awareness about Canadian history. The death of Wenjack led to the first inquest into the treatment of Native children at the schools. He was 12 when he ran away. His frozen body was found nearby next to a railway track. For some First Nations people who have seen the video, it's difficult to watch because it brings back memories of their own experiences at residential schools. But others say it's important for all Canadians to understand what happened at the schools. The residential schools, funded by the government and run by churches, were designed to help assimilate non-Native children into white culture. They operated for more than 100 years from the mid-1800s. Thousands of Native children were physically, sexually, and emotionally abused. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Choctaw elder and language instructor Henry Willis passed away this week in Oklahoma. Rhonda Lavaldo tells us more.
Choctaw hymns were sung to Choctaw elder Henry Willis as he made his final journey. Willis's grandson Dane Pula, who teaches Choctaw at the University of Oklahoma, says it may seem like a different thing to do, but it's meant to bring peacefulness to everyone.
A lot of the songs, when they're singing about them, there's a lot of it talking about, it's not really talking about feeling bad, it's actually talking about feeling good, and regardless of whether somebody knows the words or not, it seems to have the same effect on everybody.
Henry Willis grew up in an era where Native Americans were punished for speaking their own language. His daughter, the Reverend Julianne Judd, talked about one such event her father had told her.
You know, he was raised in an orphanage and told not to speak his own language. When he was 5 years old, when he went to the orphanage, they would set him in the horse trough whenever he spoke his language. For a long time, he was really tentative about teaching us that language, and so we didn't grow up speaking our language.
Willis taught Choctaw at the University of Oklahoma, along with co-authoring books on the Choctaw language and culture. He also worked for the Choctaw tribe to update the Choctaw Dictionary. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
Tribal leaders, advocates, and Native organizations say Thursday's U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Dollar General case is a win for tribal sovereignty. The 4-4 tie in the Dollar General versus Mississippi Band of Choctaw Indians affirms a lower court decision, which upheld tribal jurisdiction in the case involving the alleged sexual assault of a 13-year-old boy by a non-Indian manager. His parents sued the company in tribal court for damages. Dollar General sought to dismiss tribal jurisdiction. John Dossett, General Counsel for the National Congress of American Indians, says this case shows tribal courts are protecting the safety of people. He adds it's also important to note that there's still much work to be done.
You know, we have this ongoing need to educate the public and educate the lawyers and the Supreme Court about the nature of tribal courts and court systems. I was at the oral argument. It was pretty clear that, you know, many of the justices, they don't know very much about Indian tribes. They're not very familiar with tribal justice systems. And we have a lot of work to do to continue to educate people about that.
NCAI is among Native organizations urging Congress for the next justice to fill the empty seat on the court to be knowledgeable about Indian country and respect tribal governments. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the 10th Annual Indigenous Soccer Cup July 19th through the 24th. Information on convention and tourism services at CABQ.org. That's SIABQ.org. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at nativenews.net. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Do you or someone you care for live with chronic pain or a chronic disease like high blood pressure, diabetes, or heart disease? You can learn to manage the symptoms, understand the disease, and communicate more easily with providers. Find a list of Living Well classes offered around the state at livingwell.alaska.gov. This message, sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services and the American Diabetes Association, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
And welcome back to the studio. Andy Klein with you. And with me now is Marianne Mills and Shelley Smith, both of the Southeast Senior Services. Welcome to the studio to both of you.
Thank you.
And we wanted to talk about, we've got time to talk about a lot of different stuff that's happening with Southeast Senior Services, but we wanted to first and foremost kind of concentrate on this really cool sounding class, which is a Tai Chi program. So tell me what's going on there.
Right. Well, Tai Chi is a method, a slow exercise to prevent falls in older people. And we have a grant from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services to provide free Tai Chi classes to anyone age 60 and older. It's a very popular class. I wanted to get the word out. It's a first come, first serve basis. We enroll people. The class will be starting July 11th, and the classes will be taught by our certified instructor, Jocelyn Ferrer, and they'll take place every Monday and Friday evening at 5 p.m. from 5 to 6 at the Filipino Community Hall for 8 weeks.
And then the Tai Chi is a kind of a, it's for people who aren't familiar with it maybe, often it's seen outdoors and parks and things like that, and it's just that slow, it's a one set series of movements, right, that are all connected together, and the whole thing about Tai Chi is like mastering those for a lifetime, and people do that, and especially Asian countries, and I think it's derived in China, I think that's
It's amazing. After one of the series, I interviewed the students, and it was just, it was shocking how improved they felt from the taking the class. There was anything from reduced pain to stretch. They felt stronger, more confident, reduced stress.
And as you say, it works on balance so much because it's these slow movements and you're holding these movements and you're moving your arms and legs and head and everything. And so you're just kind of getting your body used to being in different positions. And I have never thought about that before as something to specifically benefit seniors, but it makes such perfect sense.
Right. Yeah. It's very slow, gentle movements, and the greatest risk to senior independence is falling, you know, breaking a hip or whatever. So, and this is proven, Tai Chi is proven to prevent falls in older adults. So we really encourage as many people age 16 and older to take a Tai Chi class, whether this series or the next. We offer them six series throughout the year. So this first one in our new fiscal year will be July 11th. And the phone number to call to register is 463-6113. And that's Eileen's number. So she will be registering people for the class that starts in July.
Great. And Shelley, you're the family caregiver support person there at the Senior Services. Tell me a little bit about that program.
Sure. So our program is designed to serve and support caregivers of elders. And we provide support and services throughout all the Southeast communities. And examples of those kinds of support are we provide mini grant funding for respite for caregivers to give caregivers an opportunity to have time away from their caregiving responsibilities.
I think that's a really interesting point because, you know, when I'm getting to that age where my parents and my partner's parents, her parents are, you know, getting to this age where we're kind of getting to that mode of going into caregiving. You're spending so much of your time concentrating on the needs of and the stress that's happening to the person you're caring for, without really recognizing how much stress and how much the person who's giving that care is going through.
That's right. And 1 in 4 households are caring for an elder 50 years and older. And we know as our population continues to grow older, those numbers will increase even more. And oftentimes, caregivers are also people who work full-time jobs. They may be raising families of their own. And they're commonly referred to as the sandwich generation because they're caring for both elders, taking care of their own families and children. So it's a big responsibility. It's a big job. And so we are here to provide whatever level of support that we can. And we want to meet our caregivers wherever they are and find whatever way we can provide support for their unique circumstances.
Are there income requirements or anything like that, or is this just open to everyone? Or
there are not, and it's a program that is available because of the Federal Caregiver Act, and it's supported by the state disability services. So these mini grants are not based on income, but on need.
Mm-hmm.
And other services that are available are CHORE and personal care assistance. We also provide education materials and opportunities on subjects of self-care because, as you stated, caregiving can be a stressful job with all the other responsibilities and sometimes not knowing exactly how to meet the needs of their elders, so we can also provide opportunities for training and education on caregiver skills.
Mm-hmm.
We also have support groups that that sometimes meet where caregivers can get together with their peers, with other caregivers, and talk about that experience.
Yeah, it's such an important role to fill there to. You know, it's sort of that thing. It's a natural process, and you want to be in that, have that ability, taking care of your parents, taking care of elders. It's something that feels like a natural process. But as you say, there are so many other stresses in the world that we have today that
right.
Doing it in a correct now. Is there other types of ways of doing it so that people are you know, practicing good and effective caregiving? Are there those kinds of coaching that can happen as well?
Yes, there can be, and there is a lot of good information on learning skills for caregivers. Say a caregiver may have difficulty living heavy things, then we can provide information and training on how they can best provide that level of service for their elder and still protect their own health, which is very important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We know that our elders want to remain living in their homes for as long as they possibly can, and to a very large degree, that means supporting our caregivers.
Yeah. Marianne, we were talking earlier about, well, what are some of the other things going on in Southeast Senior Services, and pretty soon you were rattling off a list of, well, there's this and this and this, because it seems like there's so much going on. But one of the things that maybe I thought was an interesting thing is we're talking about nutritious meals and providing nutritious meals. And so tell me a little bit about that program.
Yes, anyone who's age 60 or older is invited to come to the Juneau Senior Center for lunch Monday through Friday, or they could come to the Douglas Senior Center, which is actually the Douglas United Methodist Church, Tuesdays and Thursdays at noon. And so people, like I said, anyone age 60 and older, there's no income criteria. It's a complete, hot, nutritious, we call it a lunch, but it's usually more like a dinner, frankly, and it's delicious, and so we invite people to come to that.
And if just they, a nice social opportunity,
oh,
too, for people
the
to have.
That's the best thing. Well, that's as important as the meal itself, is the getting out of the house and socializing with others and seeing longtime friends or meeting new friends. And if people want more information on that service, they can call Carol, who's the manager of the Juno Senior Center, at 463-6175.
And then the other one, I mean, it's a real visible one that we see around town all the time, is the caravan. And so that program, if people are kind of entering into that period where they feel like, well, I'm not getting around as well as I could, how do they kind of find out about that?
Well, the caravan phone number is 463-6194, and the caravan is for people age 16 older or those who have disabilities which prohibit them from using the public bus of any age. So they can call me, they can call Shelley, they can call the caravan office, and we'll help get them enrolled with the caravan. Caravan hours are the same as the public bus. They're actually an extension of the bus for people that cannot ride the public bus.
And it's such a great service, and just, you know, allows for people to have a, you know, to normalize their lives even if their mobility is being challenged.
Right. Yeah. The whole point is to keep people healthy and active. That's the whole mission of Southeast Senior Services, to help people maintain their health and independent living and quality of life for as long as possible. And if folks don't want to remember all these different numbers, we do have that one number to call, which is, goes to Shelley's office at 463-6177. And so she could give them information on family caregiving, on the Tai Chi class, on the meal program, on the caravan. So 463-6177 is our main senior and caregiver resource center number.
Yeah. And then just one more time, as we were saying, the kind of cool new program that's happening, and there's a bit of a deadline for signing up for it because it fills up real fast, is the Tai Chi class.
Uh-huh.
Specifically relates to seniors and balance and preventing falls and strength and all those things that give a great benefit. So one more time, just maybe kind of run through what that is and how people can find out about it.
Well, they need to register, and it's on a first-come, first-served basis, so they need to fill out the forms in order to be on the list, and it fills up fast because it's very popular. Eileen Hosey has been assigned the task of registering folks at 463-6113, and that class will actually start July 11th, so we will let those people know if they made it. There's only 15 people or so allowed in the class. Because it's a lot of one-on-one attention, and it's very effective. Each student sets goals, and they have a pre-survey and a post-survey to see how successful it is, and so they can gauge how it improved their life. And it's just a wonderful class.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, Marianne Mills and Shelley Smith, thanks so much for coming in. Southeast Senior Services, that Tai Chi class. Find out about it quick. It's 463-6113. It's going to fill up quick. And I took a class while I was saying. I took a Tai Chi class once. It was really a fun experience. It was
wonderful.
Really cool. Oh, you have one more thing?
I do need to say that Southeast Senior Services is the largest program division of Catholic Community Service.
Okay, yeah. So
thanks.
Credit
and
where credit's due there.
May I leave you with one thought
sure.
as well?
Yeah.
So our state of Alaska has the fastest growing population of elders than any state in our country. And so we are always looking for ways to meet the needs of our elder population, and we very much want to hear from elders. So even if one of these particular programs doesn't exactly ring a bell with you, please call us. We very much want to hear from you.
And again, the number, the overall number that goes to you is 463-6177, and that's the number where you can find out about all this stuff. They'll get you pointed in the right direction.
That's right.
Is that cool with you? Is that
yes.
good?
Oh,
it's going to your desk.
Very
that's
good
fine?
For
okay,
me.
That's
yes,
good
thank
for you.
You.
Okay. Shelley and Marianne, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Andy.
certainly did do his father's command, because he knew that he was his father's only son. He came to draw men unto him. Oh, lift him up, that's all. Lift him up in his word. If you fill the name of Jesus everywhere, if you keep his name a ringing everywhere that you go, he will draw men unto him. When Jesus met the woman at Jacob's well, he certainly did have a sweet message to tell. The woman commenced to wonder, because he was a Jew, he came to draw men unto him. Oh, lift him up, that's all. Lift him up in his word. If you tell the name of Jesus everywhere, if you keep his name a ringing everywhere that you go, he will draw men unto him.
Well, that's the great Ralph Stanley, who just passed away, a great loss to amazing bluegrass and country music. Ralph Stanley from his last album. With me now in the studio is Pat Hartman of the Southeast Alaska Master Gardener Program. And Pat, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thank you, Andy. It's great to be here.
You've got the Master Gardener Garden Tour coming up. Always a awesome. It's great. It's so cool to go to these different gardens in Juneau and Douglas, right? And,
correct.
And check out what people are doing. And I'm sure the gardeners get really excited about it, too. And
they do, and everybody really gets involved and enthused. And we're doing a few things a little different this year,
okay.
So it's kind of exciting. I'll start out by saying that tickets are on sale now. You can purchase them from the Jack Hearthside Bookstore, our website, which is seak-mastergardeners.org. If you go to the calendar, go over and click on that link, you can purchase online.
Cool. And the tickets are $20, the tickets?
They're $20. So, yeah. And what that does is then the next day for this year, tomorrow morning, you would take that purchase affidavit and go to either Safeway or down here at the Jack and trade that in for the secret map.
Oh, see, that's the thing. You don't just show up on people's yards.
No, you don't. So you've got to have that map, and you also need to have, you'll be given a wristband that will allow you to venture into the gardens. And this year we have 8 gardens on tour. And it's a one-day tour, and they will vary from over on the Bonnie Bray area of Douglas out to the one we were talking about is K2's own superstar, Ed Byarsky.
Ed Byarsky is going to be on this, yes, which is a scoop.
This is a
scoop. You've heard it here first. Ed Byarsky will be on the tour, the celebrity gardener of Juneau, you know, I'm sure
Juneau and
embarrassed
and K2.
To be heard described like that. But
and he has an absolutely beautiful garden, and each of the gardens this year have a learning point. So we're calling this the 2016 Learning Garden Tour. And when you go to each of the gardens, we have various things. Like Ed is art in the garden, so you go and look at all the unusual art pieces and get ideas for that. And he has just an absolutely fantastic, beautiful
cool.
garden, too.
Now, how do the gardens get selected, the ones that are on the tour?
A lot of it is just talk. I think what we're going to do in the future is that same website that I gave you. We're going to probably by the end of next month be posting some information about this year's garden tours, and you'll be able to go online. And if you know of a garden that you think should be on the tour, you could submit it, because what we're trying to do is plan ahead of time to next year's gardens. Because there's so many of them to see, and it's always interesting to go back a couple years later and see how they've grown and developed, or the changes that have been made.
Yeah, like one thing I could imagine being a change, it just seems like it's a trend that's happened recently, is animals, right? There's so many gardeners, right? But then there's all these people that now have goats and chickens and things like that, and probably get incorporated into gardens.
There are, and that's funny you mention that, because we have one garden this year that does have chickens.
Okay.
She has 3 chickens, and they help keep the slugs down. and she has an electric fence around her yard, and it's over on the back loop. And so it keeps the bears out from the chickens, and the chickens help keep the slugs down. And as you know, we're invaded by aphids and slugs this year from our cold winter.
I love the idea of turning slugs into eggs. That's a great thing, you think about that.
Huh, that's so...
Yeah, it's just interesting.
That's an interesting thought.
Well, I think that's what's happening, right?
I've heard about using eggshells in the garden. Now right. That's a different way to think about slugs now.
But, yeah, so, that's interesting. That's one thing I was thinking of. But, and then... to me, the other thing that's really cool about, you know, when you go to a friend's house and maybe you don't even know that they're totally into gardening, there's so many places in Juneau and Douglas where the nature of the garden is not revealed from the roadside, right? You're right?
Yeah, I think you've looked at my hidden map agenda here. Because one of the other ones that we have, and they're both in the valley. We have three that are over on Douglas, and, of course, Ed's is the furthest out. And we have two in the valley that's exactly how they came about on tour, is my other co-chair, Melissa Pelosi, was visiting a friend. And she said, so you've got to see this guy's tallest hydrangea that is growing here in Juneau. And it goes clear up a pole, and she went in there, and lo and behold, from the front, it looks like an average house. You go behind his backyard, he has over 300 hostas, and he knows every name of those hostas and can tell you all about them. And they're massive. You know,
right.
They're absolutely, you know, 3 feet tall and 3 feet wide and absolutely gorgeous.
Incredible. So that is fine. Now, what's happening with gardens in general this year? It's an early year, right?
It's early. Everything seems to be about a month ahead of time from where it normally is. And gardens are kind of at a peak right now. Hopefully it continues through the summer. But it's a great time to go out and visit and get ideas because of the bloom season. And we've had so much sunshine and then the rain and things are absolutely gorgeous, but
yeah.
Sometimes things that wouldn't necessarily bloom or are blooming. So I, you know, hopefully tomorrow all the hostas are starting to bloom, and I know mine's further behind than what this garden is that has the 300 hostas. So hopefully you get to see a lot of different hostas that are actually in bloom.
Yeah. The thing, it's funny you mentioned Douglas. There's that kind of, I don't know if it's a myth exactly, but how Douglas is dark and it's hard to do that and that kind of thing. But there's lots of parts of Douglas that aren't that way, right? And
There are. And, you know, if you're familiar with where the Bonnie Bray subdivision is, the gardens that are up there have got beautiful primulas that are blooming right now, and we are the primula capital.
We are?
Oh, yeah, that's what our claim to fame is.
We're the primula capital?
Primula capital. But there's some beautiful primroses around.
I had no idea we were the primula capital.
That's what I've heard.
Just spreading rumors here.
Spread rumors. Well, they, you know, the Arboretum has got some beautiful primulas, and a lot of the people that are in the Primrose Society have got gorgeous primulas. And so one of the gardens that is on tour over there, they've got a bunch of very fragrant primulas blooming right now that it's just...
Can you describe to me what that bloom typically looks like, the primula?
I believe, and I'm not a primula expert, I believe it's like on a... They're the albicolas that are blooming right now, and theirs are... It's a white flower. It's probably about 24 to 30 inches tall, and they've got a mass of them that's just overwhelmingly fragrant and wonderful and makes you just want to linger and stay and stay in the yard and smell the primulas instead of the roses. And look, we've got some water features on that same one. So some very tranquil gardens and great ideas, whether you're into vegetables or whether you're into the pretties, as some people like to call them.
Right.
We've got somebody who does hydroponics that is on the tour this year. if you're interested in growing hydroponic tomatoes,
yeah,
or
right,
peppers,
right,
and
right, basil and all kinds of stuff,
all sorts of stuff, like herbs
and things can grow that way. Do you always go for new gardens? Are there always returning gardens in the tour, or how does that usually shake out?
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes, right. There's the all-stars out there, right? And you want to see what's happening in that garden probably every year.
I would say we don't normally do a back-to-back.
Okay.
If you're on year one, you don't want to go the next. But I will say if you're thinking, oh, my garden's not ready, your garden's always ready regardless of how new it is, because I think people, when they go out, they like looking for ideas. And sometimes, you know, if your garden's 20 years down the line and you've had professionals working on it, it's gorgeous and beautiful, but for the average person, that can be a bit overwhelming. So we like to have a good mix about, you know, maybe a garden that's newer and not totally full grown, because it normally takes plants about 10 years before they reach their full growth.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that seems to be the basis. It's about 10 years before you can really see what it's totally going to do, unless it's in your mind and,
right,
and you know what you're doing. But I would say another one of these gardens, yeah, it's probably about the house itself is, they've been there for quite some time, but they're on Douglas too, and they had their garden front part of it redone because they're on a very busy street.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're in their garden, you would never know that there's a busy street outside of it. So it's a wonderful one to go look at and say, hey, I can really have privacy in my front yard and block the noise and be able to have these lush, wonderful bushes around here. And I know Chris Myrtle did the landscape design for them.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed Bajarski did a lot of the installation work there. And theirs is just a garden you want to sit and enjoy and spend your time outside when it's not raining. Or if it is raining, you know, you've got protection too.
Yeah.
So
I can imagine that you could look at the garden tour and which gardens and what type of features they have, and then sort of look a couple years down the road and see how those things had been replicated by people who got ideas on the tour, right? You know what I mean?
Probably so. And yeah, because, you know, you kind of, or it's just good for ideas, you know, and you look, oh, I would never have thought about doing this plant or that plant. And then another one on the Back Loop Road, I know Landscape Alaska has done a lot of work on that one. It has been on the garden tour, but it's one that I saw probably in, you know, 2009, 2010 when it was on the tour. And it's very textural on the leaves. So sometimes you go to a garden and you just want to go, oh, look at the lovely flowers. And then sometimes you go to a garden and some people are really excited about the textural process of plants. So this one is an absolutely fantastic example of how you intertwine just different large leaf structural plants and then throw in the colors throughout.
Textural
kind of
just meaning leaf size and
leaf
shape
size,
of the
like
plant.
They have ornamental rhubarb, and they have the plant I fell in love with is called Rogers flower. Well, yeah, Rugosia is what it is, and it's a beautiful different texture leaves, and sometimes they're redder and sometimes they're really green, but it's the flower you really don't notice. You could cut it off and it wouldn't mean that much to you, and because you really look at the leaves. And they're a woodland plant and you don't see a whole lot of them around. So, you know, when I see them, I've probably got 4 or 5 in my yard now and have tried to grow them from seeds and any way I can obtain those flowers, just or that plant, just because it's such a fantastic plant.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite kind of garden? Southeast garden?
No.
Do you like if a well-executed garden is beautiful?
I think you go and you look at things. My garden's got a little of everything
right
in it, other than it's got woodland plants. But you know, you can grow a lot here just because of the rain. It's not like you have to have a real woodland garden covered in trees because the sun's going to beat down and kill the plants. If not, with our climate here, unless it's 70 degrees for week in and week out,
right,
you can grow a lot of plants that would typically be in a woodland garden but they don't necessarily have to be there. So, you know, when you go, you see, oh, I could grow that or I could grow that. When I first came to Chuno, I thought, oh, nobody's going to have really, really nice gardens here. And then it's amazing what you can find. So it's fantastic on that. And I was going to say, too, for those purchasing the tickets, Landscape Alaska is offering a 10%, there's a coupon that you will get with your ticket that they're going to offer a 10% discount for the next week.
Oh, cool.
If you bring that coupon in. So,
very cool. Yeah,
there's all sorts of perks for going on
a
garden tour.
Absolutely. So. Well, one more time for folks that are interested and are jazzed up about gardens after listening to your really cool description of all these things going on. How do they get in touch and how do they figure out getting on the garden tour?
They can continue to purchase today on the JAC website, the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners, which is SEAK-mastergardeners.org, or at Hearthside Bookstores. If they wait until tomorrow, those sites will no longer be active and they will have to, and regardless, they're going to have to either go to Safeway or to down to the Jack. We'll have Master Gardener representatives there tomorrow morning between 9:30 and 11. They can purchase tickets then and they can get their maps and their discount coupon and the wristbands to visit the gardens.
And then the garden tour itself goes from 11 to 4.
It does go
tomorrow.
To 11 to 4, and that compensates because we've got the distance from middle of Douglas over
to Ed's place.
To Ed Byerski's.
Yeah, right. Which that's, I just think that's a treat to be able to go and check out Ed's garden. It's just this kind of, like, it's like checking out an architect's home, you know.
Well,
it's the
and
same
they're,
thing.
They're
you know?
All, they're are all fun. So
yeah,
there's
right.
not one that I would say, you know, you
no.
should skip.
Yeah.
They're
okay.
all gorgeous,
yeah,
and I
yeah.
would go to all of
and
them.
And it's self-guided. Once you get the map, right, you just can go in
it's
whatever.
It's self-guided. You could start, you know, if you're out in the valley, you could go out to Ed's and end up over on Douglas. You can, you know, if time's of the essence, I'd go, say, go to at least a few and get some of them in because it's a great way to see what you can do here in Juneau. And that's how I got involved in the Master Gardeners. That's how I've, you know,
yeah.
someday hope to be on the tour. We'll see if that happens.
Yes. Right.
And,
that's a dream.
Yeah. And if you've got a garden that you know of or yours that you think, oh, maybe I would like to be on the garden tour someday. Maybe it's not going to be next year or the year after. Give us a jingle there on that website, email us a message, and let us come take a look at it, because now's the time to start looking at them for next year. And we're kind of leaning towards early primroses, too, maybe two next year.
Okay.
We'll see what happens
cool.
there. But we're thinking about primroses earlier in the year and maybe things later in the fall. But we'll see what we get as far as ideas for gardens.
Great. Well, Pat Hartman of the Southeast Alaska Master Gardeners and Garden Tour, thanks so much for coming in. Sounds like it's going to be a great day tomorrow.
Thank you for having us. We
and
appreciate
the,
it.
Yeah, the Garden Tour is tomorrow. You can still get tickets at jhc.org or at seak-mastergardeners.org. But you got to get them today online.
Or tomorrow.
And tomorrow you can get them beginning at 9:30 in the morning to 11.
Right. And one other thing, this year we are having two artisans out at the Bonnie Bray subdivisions, too. So if you're looking for that perfect trinket for your garden.
Oh, very nice.
Yes.
There you go.
You'll be able to pick that up.
Sounds great. Thanks, Pat.
All right.
Coming
thanks.
Up next, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 24th of June, 2016. It's the birthday of Ambrose Bierce, born near Horse Cave Creek, Ohio, 1842, well known for his short stories, particularly An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge, and also for The Devil's Dictionary. He was in the Union Army in the Civil War. He fought in some of the bloodiest battles, later wrote stories about the war, bleak, bitter stories with senseless deaths and no heroes. It was on this day in 1374 in Aachen, Germany, the first recorded outbreak of dancing plague or dancing mania, also known as St. Vitus's Dance, began. Thousands of people at a time dancing uncontrollably, days, weeks, even months, until they collapsed from exhaustion. Some danced themselves to death. At the time, people believed it was the result of a curse from St. Vitus, and now scientists tend to believe it was simply mass hysteria. It's the birthday of the poet John Ciardi, born in Little Italy, Boston's North End, 1916, author of many collections of poetry, and also the textbook How Does a Poem Mean?, still widely used in high schools. And it's the birthday of the novelist Anita Desai, born in Mussoorie, India, 1937, her mother German, her father Bengali. She grew up speaking German at home, Hindi with her friends, learned Bengali from her father, listened to Urdu poetry in the street, and learned to read and write in school in the English language. Author of 12 novels, all in English, Clear Light of Day, In Custody, Fasting, Feasting, three of them. And it's the birthday of the poet Stephen Dunn, born Forest Hills, New York, 1939, published more than 10 books of poetry before his collection Different Hours won the Pulitzer Prize in 2001. His first love was basketball. He was a star on the Hofstra basketball team of 1962. They went 25-1 on the year, played pro basketball for a couple of years after that. He was a brochure writer for Nabisco for 7 years and then quit, moved to Spain with his wife, and started to write poetry. Here's a poem for today by Ginger Murchison entitled River. Late afternoons, we'd tuck up our hems under Manisa Bridge, scrape our white knees on scrub brush and drowned trees to slide down the dirt bank, past milkweed gone to seed, cattails and trash, to sit on stones at the edge of the river and giggle and smoke, waiting to wolf whistle North High's rowing team. In the shadows where the milk chocolate river unfolded, ooze between our toes, we'd strip, risk long-legged insects, leeches, and mothers, for the silt slick on our thighs, the air thick with the smell of honeysuckle, mud, the rest of the day somewhere downstream. We didn't know why, but none of us wanted to go home to polite kitchens and mothers patiently waiting for what happened next, the way women have always waited for hunter husbands, kept vigils, and prayed at the entrance of mines. The poem titled River by Ginger Murchison, from A Scrap of Linen, A Bone, published by Press 53, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store, or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
Programming is made possible in part by Juno's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water, available in Juno stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. Well, what's big and green, weighs 8 tons, shaped like a Kleenex half pulled from the box? Well, that's Nimbus, of course. And the polarizing and controversial sculpture recently returned to the Andrew P. Kashavarov State Library Archives and Museum that just opened up right across the street here from K2 in downtown Juno. In this story that just won first place from the Society of Professional Journalists for Arts and Entertainment Reporting in the Pacific Northwest, KTOO's Matt Miller has more on the 39-year-old sculpture's provocation, banishment, and resurrection.
On a recent summer morning, Bob Banghart of the State Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums is getting his first close-up look at the partially restored Nimbus.
Yeah, sweet. No, it's just totally remarkable, the shift, the dynamic, and how it looks now.
Banghart and Canadian sculptor Robert Murray are checking out Nimbus just before the 19-foot sculpture is moved out of the construction staging yard and returned to its permanent home. Murray, who now makes his home in Pennsylvania, created Nimbus in 1977 as part of a public art program of the National Endowment for the Arts. Murray says he was inspired by the fjords and mountains around Juneau during an early visit.
Not in any sort of literal sense, because once you get into it, the way in which the arch is formed and how one element, there's basically two elements to it, how one element supports the other and so on, is what kind of fascinates me about the form it takes.
A jury panel picked Murray in the sculpture concept. They also cited the sculpture in the small round plaza in front of the Diamond Courthouse in Juneau, just across the street from the Alaska State Capitol. State lawmakers weren't very happy with what they considered a Gumby-colored, oversized, exploded garbage dumpster outside their windows. Juneau residents were also divided on the sculpture. Late Juneau watercolor artist Ree Munoz said on Conversations, a television program recorded in the 80s, that she didn't care for it.
I didn't like Nimbus mainly from the standpoint that the workmanship on it was real bum. I mean, there were little dents, the foundry, how they put it together. Mm-hmm. It was very poor workmanship, so I'm glad that it's gone. I have no objection to art being removed if people don't like it.
In 1984, 6 years after Nimbus was installed, legislation passed that forced Governor Bill Sheffield to remove Nimbus from the Court Plaza. Murray doesn't take all the criticism personally, and he takes the controversy in stride. In fact, he seems to relish it.
I mean, if you're not rattling people's cages a little bit, you're failing. If suddenly the work is just welcome and openly embraced, then that leads me to think I'm doing something wrong here.
Murray notes that such criticism is usually lobbed by those unfamiliar with other art forms or those who may have outdated ideas about the history of contemporary outdoor sculpture.
It's come a long way from the days of statuary and, you know, men on horseback, and usually who didn't look like the guy they depicted, nor did the horse look like the horse that they rode, but that's okay. You know, that kind of monumental, what I call park sculpture, that kind of statuary, is something that people were used to seeing in outdoor situations.
Murray creates stabiles, the opposite of mobiles, large stationary or rigid monochrome sculptures that imply motion or particular forms with the bending, folding, or twisting of the steel or other materials. He's created over 60 pieces since 1959, and most have been installed in museums, galleries, and public facilities in the United States and Canada. During Nimbus's removal from the Court Plaza, as much as 4 inches of steel was left behind when the sculpture was crudely cut away and hauled off.
It was just torched off following the grade, right at grade level. But that grade had quite a slope to it, so the piece was listing slightly.
The slumping sculpture languished in a state storage yard for 5 years before a museum curator had the novel idea to requisition it as a historical artifact, because it was Alaska's most controversial sculpture. Nimbus was placed on the grounds of the old Alaska State Museum in 1991, and it remained there until demolition of the facility last year. Now, after nearly 4 decades, perhaps Nimbus has become much more than just a simple piece of abstract art. Maybe it is historical art, or even performance art, or political art. Perhaps it's a symbol for the debate over public funding for the arts and politicians sticking their nose in the process.
Well, yes to all of those, all of the above. And that was a little bit what was wrong with the controversy, is it got a little bit out of hand before the piece had hardly had a chance to acclimatize, for people to acclimatize themselves to the sculpture, let's say.
When Nimbus was reinstalled in front of SLAM, Murray was there to orient the sculpture and make sure that you could see through the arch from the street. Nimbus's restoration work this summer will include sandblasting the steel and a new paint job in its original Crayola-like seafoam green color. Murray may return to Juneau someday. SLAM officials say they're considering a retrospective exhibition of models he created while designing some of his most notable sculptures. Critics may be interested to know that an early concept of Nimbus featured a dark blue color, much like Gumby's flying mermaid friend, Goo. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
That's Matt Miller's awesome report there on Nimbus, and once again, congratulations to KTO and to Matt for winning the first place from the Society of Professional Journalists for Arts and Entertainment Reporting in the Pacific Northwest for that very story. Really cool to hear that again. I am personally a fan of Nimbus. I don't know what you think, Becky. Are you a fan of Nimbus?
I'm a fan of Nimbus.
Becky James is here to talk about summer fun. Becky is one of the owners of Above and Beyond Alaska, and tell me what's going on with Above and Beyond Alaska. You guys, this is your busy time. You're geared up, you're ready to go. You know, it's like
definitely a busy time for sure. Yeah, we are in our 15th summer.
Amazing. 15 years you've been doing it.
We've been doing 15 years, and
I can remember when you started it. It just does not seem like 15 years ago.
Started from our house, operating in a little office there, so we've definitely expanded. And we're in our 15th season. We have a large crew of about 30 employees, 30 to 40 employees, and we do a variety of things. Of course, one of our big draws that we do every summer is our kayak rental shop, and that's a great activity that caters to locals. So that's open in the summertime, 7 days a week. Usually, I think the hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. So we have kayak rentals.
Lock Bay.
Yep,
there,
out of Lock Bay Harbor.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, we do guided trips around, guided day trips and overnight trips. But specifically, one thing that we just got permitted for was kayak guiding and canoe guiding on Mendenhall Lake. And we actually canoe across Mendenhall Lake. We have 8-person canoes, and this is a new trip this summer. And we get out on the glacier and trek around. So we actually have a combination. It's kind of a multi-sport trip, which is canoe paddling mixed with glacier trekking.
That's cool.
So that's really fun. And we've been, in the past, been permitted just to hike out by trail. So this does make it a little bit more accessible for people who maybe don't have the full, 8 or 9 hours in the day to hike out there. And so we get a variety of different clientele from all over, people, whether they're coming in by air, ferry, or cruise. They come out and do this activity because everyone wants to see the glacier.
Right,
it's beautiful.
Well, it's gorgeous, So it's funny to say, the way you just described how you've been in the business for 15 years, it started working for Framer House. Were there concepts you had about the business? I mean, sort of an obvious question, but were there concepts about how the business was going to run and about the things you'd be doing have completely changed? I mean,
A lot of it's actually come from the original business plan that we created. It was delayed, right? So one thing I've learned is things take time to grow, and you got to be patient, and they don't come easy. So that's what we've learned, is that our original business plan had always this in mind, with this different aspects of adventure in Juneau and taking advantage of the ocean and the mountain environments around here and the ice field. So now that we're in 15 years in business, we've been able to obtain permits and actually kind of get to the level where we wanted to be with when we first started.
So it's more like it's just taken this long to get to what the vision was originally.
Right, and creating your reputation and building that reputation. And for us, we love a variety of kind of the mountain ocean environments. We love the idea of offering kayak rentals as well, because we like to do things independent, things that are on our own. So we like making that available for people who may not want to go guided. And one thing, too, that we're doing this year is not only do we have kayak rentals from Auk Bay, but we also have kayak rentals now from the Eagle Valley Center area. It's one of the beaches. And so it's really nice, because now you can actually rent kayaks and be right out in wilderness quickly. And all the equipment still has to be rented from our kayak shop in Auk Bay, just the paddle gear. But the actual kayaks you can take out the road and not have to haul them anymore. And that's a big thing, because a lot of locals usually have to come in, grab the kayaks, and haul them on their car. So that's a pretty big area now that we're trying to market and get people.
And how does that work again? Where are the actual kayaks stored?
So they're actually locked up and stored in the woods near the beach, out by the Eagle Valley Center.
Okay.
And as far as getting the rental contract and all the information and paddling gear gets checked out from the kayak shop in Auk Bay, but they can drive
north.
But
you're on your way out that way anyway.
Boom,
as
we have a map.
Right.
Shows you where you can go and pick up the kayaks, and then you can paddle right there on the water. So
that's awesome.
That's really nice. And, of course, that whole Amalga area, it's like kind of the Channel Islands Marine Park, is really full of wildlife. There's Benjamin Islands not too far away.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a nice gateway to lots of adventure.
Yeah, right. So let's segment your business a little bit when we talk about Above and Beyond. We got the kayak stuff.
Yep.
And there's the summer and there's the winter.
Well, we don't have so much winter stuff.
You don't have much winter stuff?
No,
okay,
so we, yeah, so,
so
we do all our marketing, advertising.
Okay.
You know, all our bookings come in through the wintertime.
Right.
So really our busy time is during the summertime, May through September, and we have the options for a lot of people want to go guided, so they can go guided kayaking, whether it's on the ocean, along the coast, or Mendenhall Lake near the icebergs, or they could do overnight trips with us, and we do a variety of locations for overnights. We do Pat Creek, Brown Bear Sanctuary. We have permits out there. Tracy Arm is another place we take people, and then glacier camping. We fly up and we do camping up on either the, you know, the Lemon Glacier is kind of our main destination, and we set up camp and do some trekking and climbing and exploration and kind of that more alpine environment.
It's really cool. I got a chance one time to hike across the Lemon Glacier, and it, you know, that's a cool area up there, you know, and it's so big and vast.
It's amazing.
You know, you really get that sort of mental image so much more of how vast that Juneau ice field is, you know, when you just get right to the edge of that glacier.
It's amazing. Yeah. In fact, my five-year-old said the other day, he's like, so, Mom, there's 38 glaciers that come from the ice field? I'm like, yeah, that's about right, you know?
Yeah, that's
and I said,
right.
You know, and there's lots to explore. And so, yeah, the Lemon Glacier is beautiful because it's so different from any of the other landscapes. It's got the cliffs kind of, the waterfalls coming down, the glacial lakes up there. So it's very pretty, mixed with also the glacier ice.
Yeah. Heinzelman Ridge going back in there, and then isn't it kind of like Devil's Paw is back there?
I think so.
Yeah,
Devil's,
right?
Yep.
Yeah, and so like there's these really severe, amazing-looking mountains back there.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Do you have a favorite trip? Do you have a favorite thing that you guys do or something that maybe just surprised you about how awesome it was or
you
that
know,
kind of thing?
Or? I love hiking up to the Mendenhall and see, I love the glacier environment. But I also really love our Pat Creek trips that we do, and those are really popular, of course, with a lot of independent travelers and locals. One thing we have as well at Pat Creek is we do the kayak rentals out at Windfall Island. So we have a fleet of kayaks, so that's another thing that people can do, locals or visitors, is they can pick up the paddle gear from Ok Bay, and then they can charter their own plane out to Windfall Island and rent the kayaks and paddle into Pat Creek. And it's ideal if you have at least a couple days out there just because it maximizes your time for bear viewing. There's actually good wildlife viewing. So Sean and I, we love that route. In fact, we love doing the Juneau to Pat Creek route where you can actually paddle from Juneau, go over to Oliver's Inlet, down Seymour Canal and finish at Pat Creek, and then you can fly out, so you can do a one-way.
There's a portage across from Oliver Inlet. You take a little rail car,
yes,
and you put. It's a really cool thing to do. And if you haven't done it, go do it. You know,
yes.
It's really cool. And you're on Admiralty Island, and it's the Kingdom of the Bears, and you know there's all that. It's really wild, you know.
It is wild. And that's probably the most exciting that we like to do is that kind of being out there and being able to, I like the one-way route, so being able to do like a paddle from Juneau to Pat Creek or vice versa is pretty awesome because then you're in true wilderness and you feel kind of remote and private. It's not busy, so it's really awesome being out there.
It's really out there. Well, thanks so much for coming in. Any other things you want to just offer for folks to maybe how to get in touch or if they're interested or locals especially or that kind of thing?
Absolutely. So for locals, just kind of some information is that we do offer local discounts on guided trips. We do offer 20% discounts. So if they want to book, they can just go directly through our office by going to beyondak.com. That's our website, or just Googling Above and Beyond Alaska in the search engine. And then for rentals, it's kind of a rental or a local service, so we don't offer discounts for that. But rentals are a great way to get out and be active on the water and do it at an affordable price because it is pretty economical. And that can be done through our kayak rental shop at junokayak.com. They can go to the website or call them directly. And, again, we have rentals out at Ok Bay, Eco Valley Center, and also Pat Creek area.
Yeah,
so,
very cool.
Yeah.
Becky, thanks so much for coming in. That's Becky James from Above and Beyond Alaska, one of the great businesses here in Juneau that's getting people out into this environment that is one of the reasons why we're here and why we love this area so much.
Awesome. Thanks, Andy.
You've
got to come out with us, too.
That sounds awesome. I will take you up on that. All right.
Okay, take care.
Thank you. And that's a Juneau afternoon for today. Thanks so much for tuning in. Appreciate it very much, and have a great weekend.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is